Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is program 25 for March 22nd, 2007. Conestoga is Oklahoma's largest literary, science fiction, and fantasy convention, and it's time once again for another podcast recorded at Conestoga 10. I have the pleasure of bringing you my second interview with author M.H. Bonham and fellow podcaster. This is my interview with M.H. Bonham, also known as Maggie Bonham. I interviewed her actually almost a month ago over the internet using a service called Skype. I'm Chris Merle, the podcast host, one of the podcast hosts for the Conestoga podcast used to promote the convention, and I'm doing a follow-up interview or a follow-up conversation with Maggie, who I finally get to meet in person, although I've seen her at you know, previous Conestogas and probably other conventions as well that have been in the area. And thank you for joining me again.
Hey, thanks for having me on board.
And if you missed the first podcast with her, just to let you know, she has her own very own audio book, which is Prophecy of Swords, which is up to what chapter now online?
Right now it's up to chapter 19.
Well, you have a lot of catching up to do if you want to listen to it, but of course if you don't want to wait, you can go ahead and buy the book. Of course, that's the whole purpose of audio books, isn't it?
Well, it's part of the purpose. Most of the purpose is to build a readership and to have some new fans, get to know your works and that sort of thing. But, yeah, buy my book, please.
And you'll hear that a lot from other Yard Dog authors, which I believe is what Yard Dog Press is the one that puts it out?
Yes. Yard Dog Press puts out Prophecy of Swords. And it will also be putting out the sequel. And both of these are standalone, by the way. So if you read one, you don't have to read the other. Is Runestone of Tewas. So they'll have that as well.
And when is that going to be coming out?
That's coming out in 2007. And I also have another book coming out in 2007 with Dragon Moon Press, which is Loch Lea, which is a prequel, as it were. And that, again, is a standalone.
When we had our panel earlier, I like Jenny Wirt's suggestion is that you could do like one-off stories, kind of like maybe an audio-only like short story that is not in any of the books. A lot of writers write short stories. You know, they put anthologies out, you know, in a particular universe that's their favorite. And, you know, I that appeals to me.
Yeah, it appeals to me as well. The positive side is that people can go ahead and listen to the one-off and then decide if that's kind of the story that they want to go with. The other side of it is that obviously you can't really sell that story for first rights, but then again, maybe you don't want to.
Well, I think since we're both fairly new to podcasting, we have two aspects here. We've got the professional side and we have the fan side. And we're also avid podcast listeners as well. And I think both of us have become big fans of Michael and Evo's Winging It. So we're plugging that show, but we do have to warn you, it's definitely not work safe.
And it's not kid safe either.
Yeah, definitely not kid safe. You'll hear it in their credits very quickly. There's one word that they use. They don't use it. They do avoid F-bombs, though.
Not anymore.
Oh, they stopped doing that?
They stopped doing that. So they stopped bleeping them because at one point, because they had what was called the drinking game.
Uh-huh.
And what they did was that they had certain words, certain phrases, and like, for example, whenever Jack Mangan said Spherical Tomy, mm-hmm. that was the time to take a shot of whatever you were drinking. Well, the F word was one of those things. Mm-hmm. So everybody kept saying the F word over and over again as kind of a joke, and poor Michael Armenengay had to keep bleeping the darn thing out, and he finally just gave up on it.
Well, I actually had one of my drink recipes. I don't remember the podcaster who his whole podcast is different drink recipes, and then he reads them, and he gets them played on Michael and Evo's. And my drink was called It's Green, as in a reference to Star Trek, the original series, and of course they also did it in Next Generation as well. And just if you like drinking, I won't go into the gory details of how the drink was created, but it was sort of by accident. Basically, you take a cheap whiskey, I mean really cheap whiskey, because you don't want to do this to good whiskey, good single malt. You take your glass, you fill the bottom of it, cover the bottom of it, maybe, you know, one or two fingers, and then you put ice in it, of course, and then you fill up the rest of the way with Mountain Dew, which isn't quite green, but it does have a greenish cast to it.
Yes.
And believe it or not, it actually tastes pretty good. You'd think, like, oh my God, that it's awful. And it has an odd taste to it. It almost tastes chocolatey, but it's not really. It just kind of reminds you of it. And of course, it was in honor of the two Star Trek episodes where they mention it. There was also a Next Generation episode where Data brings up a bottle and goes, and they ask him, well, what is it? It's green.
Yes.
So that's where we get the name from. I'm trying to come up with a recipe for Romulan ale, but if someone else beats me to it, well, oh well. It's going to involve blue food coloring, and maybe blue food coloring and Zima.
Yeah, that probably makes a lot of sense. You know, you might want to also consider green food coloring for It's Green.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing you have to put in its grain is you have to drop a gummy bear into it as well.
Oh, yes. I heard about this, come to think of it. Yeah, that was pretty wild. And your friend, one of the funny parts about listening to your friend do these different mixes is that he'll say, and I really didn't have that, so I decided to instead mix this instead. And so he'd go ahead and you'd be like, but this is totally different than the original recipe.
Well, you can always have variations on a theme.
Yeah, well, a lot of variations, and I just kept sitting there laughing at it after a while.
Well, we're not going to try to emulate Michael and Evo because they're crazy. But I did find out that Evo Terra is originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And
I'm sorry. No. Yeah. Ooh, we got to blurt that one.
That's okay. My wife, Melissa, went to the Nebula Banquets, and they had a thing on podcasting. And so she went up and got their card and talked to them for a minute or two and found out that he was originally from Tulsa. The other one, Michael, I guess he's from like someplace in Nebraska or North Dakota.
Yeah, Nebraska. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those states up there that have less population than Tulsa or Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and tend to be a little bit more colder and windier, I imagine.
And flatter. Contrary to popular belief, Oklahoma isn't completely flat. It's bumpy.
No comment.
Well, she lives in Colorado. Now, half of Colorado is flat. The other half is definitely not flat.
Yeah, I live on the not flat side. So you know, when I came down here, I said, wow, I can see for miles.
And it looks like we have a little interruption here, so I'm going to pause this podcast for just a second.
www.balticonpodcast.org.
Let the Balticon Podcast take you inside the minds of the people who make science fiction happen. Get the scoop on what's happening in science fiction from authors, techies, and scientists. We guarantee that you'll be entertained and enlightened.
The Balticon Podcast. Great interviews with the people who make science fiction happen. Authors, fans, and honest-to-God scientists. And we play music at the end. Search for Balticon in iTunes or visit us at www.balticonpodcast.org.
And we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
We had a little bit of convention business that we had to take care of. This is one of the famous things, because we're recording these podcasts, and we want to have a live studio audience, although right now it's just me and Maggie. But that's okay, because that's the advantage of podcasts, is you can see the rest of the convention, and then you get to listen to the podcast later so that you can still kind of – it's not like, you know, a cow regurgitating, you know, and chewing their cud, you know, to savor it, but that's just not a good comparison, is it?
No. I think you ought to cut that one out here.
Okay.
I think it's more along the lines of people are busy with the con. They're not sure about the podcasts right yet. They're all having fun and plus Selena's downstairs, which means, you know, wherever she goes, there's sort of like, it's like organized chaos ensues. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of, you know, it's a lot of fun there. So, and here we are podcasting. No, anyway.
And if anyone wants a delightful guest who will be who's just the most amazing, wonderful guest that you could ever possibly have. I would highly recommend interviewing Selena Rosen.
Oh, gosh. She's a blast. She really is. And we have she's larger than life, shall we say.
Yes. Well, actually, you have to be a cruel taskmaster if you're going to interview her. Otherwise, you'll lose complete control of the podcast. I was barely able to control it when I had interviewed her and Lynn. Although when you interview both of them, Lynn and Selena, you have to prod Lynn to get her to say something.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, that's kind of a funny thing because Lynn is pretty outspoken when you're talking to her. But you know, I think Selena's the good show person, as it were.
Oh, yeah. And Lynn is very articulate, too.
Oh, yes. Yes, quite. So,
what else can we talk about? I don't know. This is
why don't we talk about the state of the publishing industry?
State of the publishing industry. Well, okay. Well, that sounds good because that seems to be your you know more about that than I do. So, why don't you go ahead and tell me what you know?
Well, first of all, you all may or may not be familiar with the fact I am published. I am a published author with 22 books.
And list a couple of the more popular titles or recent titles.
The recent titles are, well, Prophecy of Swords, of course. And then I have Dog Grooming for Dummies. I have The Complete Idiot's Guide to Labrador Retrievers. I have Bring Me Home Dogs Make Great Pets. Bring Me Home Cats Make Great Pets. I also have a book of short vignettes called A Dog's Wisdom, which is quite a nice little gifty book. Anyway, I'm published with a number of large New York publishers and also with small press. So it's kind of an interesting mix going on right now.
Did you start primarily writing nonfiction, or did you always write fiction and then nonfiction?
Interestingly enough, what happened was I started writing fiction when I was 15. And like most people who write fiction when they're 15, I didn't do a very good job. I mean, I wrote my first novel when I was 15, and that will hopefully never see the light of day. What happened was that I tried selling the book, and I got some very nice rejections, actually, which was kind of amazing, you know, for a 15-year-old. And you know, some people actually sent me, you know, some editors actually sent me letters saying, "Wow, you write really well." And you know, in retrospect, I'm thinking, boy, no, I don't. But I tried to get published several times when I was younger, up through 22 or so, you know, then kind of took a hiatus off of it, but, you know, kept writing a few short stories here or there. And what happened was that I think it was in 1995, I had been doing the dog thing, and I race sled dogs. So I had subscriptions to Dog Fancy, Mushing Magazine, all these places. And I started realizing I could write better than some of the writers there.
I think that's a common, you know, you look at a magazine on the shelf and go, "I can do better than that." And that often launches a lot of careers.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I hate to say that ego launches careers, but you have to have a certain amount of ego in this business to do this sort of thing. And so I went ahead, wrote the article, which you're never supposed to do. You always write a query letter first. And then I sent the query letter out. They sent me a "let's see it." I sent them the article, and then I think it was like a month, I got an acceptance, a contract, and it was really funny because I got in the mail and I pulled it out and I looked and I read it through and it didn't dawn on me it was a contract.
Ah, okay.
And it was one of these things where I looked at it and I said, okay, they're offering me 300 and what? What? Well, this is like an offer letter. And, you know, I'd never had anything like that. And so, you know, I was just so excited, and that's pretty much how my how my writing career got started. So it got started in the nonfiction, and then eventually, you know, I kept pushing the fiction side eventually.
Are you enjoying that more?
I think it's a lot of fun. I do a mix of fiction and non. The nonfiction, of course, makes more money, but that's to be expected because it's a bigger market out there. If you like go to a Barnes & Noble or if you go to a Borders or Books A Million or whatever, look at the bookshelves and see how many books are in the nonfiction versus how many fiction there is.
Now, this may be one of those, why did he ask that question? But when you are working, it may just simply depend on the work that you're working on. Mm-hmm. Do you find that when you're writing nonfiction versus fiction, do you feel that you have to put a lot more effort into the nonfiction than the fiction? Which do you think takes more time, or does it just depend on the piece of work you're working at the time?
I think it depends on the piece I'm working at the time. Quite honestly, I've been known and have been known to put out a nonfiction book, and I mean a fairly sizable one, mm-hmm. in about a 60,000 to 80,000 word book, which is, you know, roughly the size of a short novel, in a month. So I mean, you know, I can crank out a nonfiction book pretty quickly if I need to. Fiction, it takes me a little bit longer, although some of my fiction goes really, really fast, and then other times it just depends.
Oh, well, since we had an audience show up, we had one person. Just to reiterate, I'm Chris Murley. I'm the podcast host for the Conestoga Podcast. I'm interviewing author Maggie Bonham, and who is also a fellow podcaster as well. So it's always nice to trade notes to find out how they do things, and hopefully we'll eventually know to raise the bar of the quality of it since it's such a new field.
Well, actually, I think you do such a good job with the Conestoga Podcast. I was really impressed with the interview you did with me.
Well, thank you very much. You do, of course, one of the things when you do a podcast is, you know, the release agreements are very important because you want to protect yourself and the interviewee. Although you could cut and splice and change the words around and stuff like that, which would be very bad form. But if you're not honest with your guests and try to show them in the best light possible, you're not going to get to interview anyone else.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me too. I mean, what I try to do when I do interviews is I try to put the person at ease, and we end up just it's more or less a rap session. You know, we're sitting there and yapping away and talking about this, that, and the other. And you know, if somebody says to me, "Oh, don't put that in," it's like, okay, I won't put that in. I swear to God, I won't do that. Mm-hmm. And you know, for the most part, it's pretty. You know, I think that most people are pretty okay with it.
Well, that's good. Yeah, also, what I'd like doing is editing is very important, and although I do a little bit of writing, I'm beginning to see how important editing is, just cutting out excess words. There's a lot of ums and uhs, and you don't really have to cut all of those out, but you might want to go through the first minute or two of the podcast so they don't jump out at you, and then as the people start listening, get eased into it, you can kind of leave them in, so...
Yeah, well, what I've discovered is that I do a lot that sort of thing. Or what I'll do is, you know, because people are talking on the other end so much, and they'll pause, and then
that's a verbal pause, yeah.
Yeah,
silent.
They'll go silent, and then I'll have to say something like, and I suddenly realized that after a while, I say a lot. And so that's the first thing that gets cut out of my podcast immediately because it's like, oh, my gosh.
Well, let's talk about some more of our favorite podcasts. I'm going to list off a couple of non-science fiction-related podcasts. I like Slacker Astronomy, The Naked Scientist, which is actually from BBC Radio. I like Living on Earth, Mother Jones Radio. It doesn't necessarily betray my politics, but... I won't say that I'm leaning to the left, but anyway, what are some other podcasts that I listen to? Oh, yeah, I listen to Stardate every day, and then I also listen to Pulse of the Planet, and I also listen to, what else do I listen to? Science Friday, when they podcast those episodes.
Right.
So there's a lot of professional ones that I listen to. Digital Planet by BBC America, uh-huh. or BBC, not BBC America, that's the TV cable TV channel.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's just a few of my favorite podcasts. What are some of yours?
Oh, well, mine ends up in the science fiction category, unfortunately, or maybe
fortunately.
I like listening to Michael and Evo's Winging It. I like listening to I've been listening to the Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas recently, and what they do is that they talk about the late or old science fiction.
I was really surprised because I figured they would be talking about, you know, Firefly and Battlestar Galactica and all that, but no, they're talking about classics like Canonical for Leibowitz or even some more recent stuff by Neal Stephenson as well.
They even talk about things like the Dune movie and you know, the made for TV version of Dune and things like that. So I have to kind of chuckle about that. I like Slice of Sci-Fi. I like Escape Pod. That is really a great show.
Yeah, definitely good for reprints.
And what other ones? Of course, the Sci-Fi Traveling Road Show. We have to get that in.
Which, of course, is your host right next to me, which is Maggie Bonham. Speaking of Dune, we have a fan of Dune in our audience who we can't use the F-bomb, but we won't mention the person's name unless he wants us to. But I agree with him on the... Well, there's the original movie, the David Lynch Dune was okay, watchable. Especially, well, the one they created for television was the most watchable version, I thought. But then they did the miniseries, which was theoretically more faithful to the books, but it was, the costumes were dreadful, the acting was was awful, and the Sardaukar, which are like, you know, They're supposed to be like the elite killer forces of the universe, and they were worse fighters than the stormtroopers. They wore these black chef's hats, you know. just the costumes were just dreadful. And Stilgar, he looked like his day job was that he rode on the back of a garbage truck.
yeah. Well, one of the I'm probably one of the few people who actually liked the original, the movie. And the reason why I liked it was, first of all, the acting was decent. For what they had at the time for special effects, pretty good. The still suits, yeah, they didn't have the enclosed head thingy and whatever else. But it was more true to life than what they did in the other things. The other thing is that you actually had some real actors in that. Yes, they didn't cover, you know, all the work that had to be done to get Paul and his mother to be accepted with on Dune. But, you know, quite honestly, I just kind of said, okay, fine. You know what? It actually made me read the book.
I had read the book, so that probably prejudiced me against it. The other thing I didn't like about the first movie was, I guess they cut out all the scenes with the actress that played the Shout-Out Mapes. Mm-hmm. And you see her come in, she goes, "I am the Shout-Out Mapes." And then the next scene you see her throat is cut, and she's gurgling, "Aw," you know, and that's it. It's like she had a bigger part to play in the book, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean, you understand that. But then you understand that at the time it was hard enough trying to get a movie like that to screen. And also, how long was it? About 2 hours?
Oh, yeah.
If that. And I remember when I first went to see it, they handed out, I swear to God, they did this. They handed out a little sheet to bring into the movie theater so that you could keep all the names of the people in, you know, so that you could keep track of them all. And, you know, I thought, I don't need this because, you know, I could figure it out. But evidently, that's part of the reason why most of Dune didn't really work for a lot of people, was because, you know, it was like too many characters for everybody to figure out, except for those of us who could figure these things out. And I just had a great time with it.
You know, I think what a great name for a podcast, and I will just say Bleep Dune.
All right.
Well, I enjoyed the trilogy. Actually, I read the first four books. I didn't go beyond that, and I decided I'm not going to reread any of them except the first one, because the first one's a standalone, and although the others are good, I think the first one stands alone. You don't need to read the rest of them, although I'm sure the authors who have continued the franchise would disagree with me.
Well, I think that the first book is easily the best book. I haven't gone. I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm sorry, Brian. But I haven't gone through and read the House Atreides, the House Harkonnen or Harkonnen. Nobody seems to be able to tell me how to pronounce it. But nevertheless, it's one of those things where I look at it and I say, you know, if I have time, maybe I'll read it someday.
Well, we're all familiar with Sturgeon's Law. Basically, I'm going to paraphrase it. You know, 90% of science fiction is crap, or 95%, and then, you know, only 10% is worth reading. Well, when you look at the number of books being published today and the thousands of science fiction and fantasy titles, even if there's like 1,000 titles that are published a year, new titles, if 10% of them are good, well, that's 100 books. And, you know, I know some people are voracious readers, and they can, you know, read 100 books a year. I don't read that many fiction books in a year, and although I wish I was a voracious reader, you can't even read all the good stuff, which is unfortunate. But
yeah, and that's part of the reason. And let's bring this back to that's why I do patiobooks.com. Oh, there's an ad there. But no, seriously, that's why I went ahead and started listening to some of the audiobooks, because it was during times when I couldn't read. Okay. And so that's what I had to do.
Well, I think we're going to have to wrap things up here to get ready for the next podcast. Maggie, I want to thank you for returning, allowing me to interview you in person.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. I sure had a lot of fun with this.
Be sure to check out Maggie's podcast, The Sci-Fi Traveling Roadshow, and her patio book, Prophecy of Swords. Maggie will, of course, be returning as a guest to Conestoga 11. Speaking of Conestoga 11, I'd like to remind our listeners it will be held July 20th through the 22nd, 2007, at the Radisson Tulsa. Our guest of honor this year is Laurel K. Hamilton, artist guest of honor John Picasso, Toastmistress Elizabeth Moon, and our special 1632 guest of honor Eric Flint. Our fan guests of honor this year are Richard and Michelle Zellick, who are heavily involved in Archon 31/9th NASFIC, the North American Science Fiction Convention, which is held when Worldcon is abroad. It will be August 2nd through the 5th, 2007, in Collinsville, Illinois. I hope to have Elspeth Bloodgood, my co-host, in a future podcast to talk about Conestoga 11. She is this year's programming chair, who has taken over the reins from the incredibly hardworking and often underappreciated Melissa Tatum. I've also lined up the talented and devious Greg Turner. He is in charge of gaming and will tell us what is planned for Conestoga 11. And I might just be able to pry information out of him about what the Penguin Playhouse players have in store for this year's play. So thanks for listening until our next Conestoga podcast. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org, or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcast@sftulsa.org. Please send us an email or put a comment on the website and let us know what you thought of this podcast.